Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Getting Light. I'd like to ask all of you to please think about calling in or just listening in as we interview our guest today. There are so many things going on around the world today, and we're going to be talking about the, as always, the incarceration of the penal system and the comparison between the penal system in other countries and also in the USA. We have on with us today a very special guest that was introduced to us by Franz Dell, who is unable to be here today. But Khalil Shaikh is going to be speaking on imprisonment and his eventual success as founder of his own organization, From Prison to This Organization, supporting incarcerated individuals returning to society. I would also like to acknowledge Franz Dell for his years of excellence in which he treated, interacted with, and also befriended individuals in his prison who are now writers, authors, organization CEOs, and much more. Franz has brought some of the most successful individuals he has known, has come to know, to this show, and I truly thank him. After serving a long sentence in prison during Franz Dell's employment as warden, Khalil made an astonishing career in supporting others to return to society. And Franz speaks very highly of this intelligent, hardworking individual who has a leading regional role in his organization. He has a huge network, and he's very familiar with high-level public servants, politicians, and others. He organized a national conference on prisons and has a lot more plans for the near future, which he will speak on as well. So please, everyone, let's welcome our guest, Khalil. And Khalil, can you please introduce yourself? And anything I left out, please introduce yourself to the audience and let them know a little bit more before we get started. And thank you again. It's an honor to have you on with us. Khalil? Oh, we have a problem here. Khalil, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear
me?
Okay.
Yes. Can you let the audience know a little bit more about yourself before we start the show?
Yes. Now, thank you for having me. Well, my name is Khalil. I'm from the Netherlands. I'm 38 years old. I've been wrongfully convicted and spent 10 years in prison. And when I came out, I wanted to help my fellow incarcerated individuals. So I started my own foundation, where we help formerly incarcerated individuals to use their experience to benefit others that are in prison or maybe making some wrong choices before they go to prison. And we do that at different levels. We help individuals, but we also advise organizations and public officers.
Khalil, I wanted to ask you, what is the name of your organization?
Cilio.
And how do you spell it? And how do you spell that?
S-I-L-E-O.
Cilio Foundation.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's in the Netherlands?
That's in the Netherlands, yeah.
Tell me, I wanted to bring up somebody's name because we have a lot in the United States. We have a lot of wrongfully convicted people in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, he went into prison when he was 16 or 17 years of age. He served 17 years, and he came out and became a lawyer. And he is a lawyer in New York. His name is Jeffrey Deskovic. And Jeffrey went in as a child. He served quite a few years in prison before he was exonerated, and he became a lawyer. And he, too, is helping, advocating for the wrongfully convicted. We have some that are wrongfully convicted that are still sitting in prison. One of them is Christopher Dunn. And he is in a prison in Missouri, and his case was dismissed years and years ago when he was in his teens as well, and he's still in prison in spite of the fact that his case was dismissed by a judge, and anyone can find that on the internet just typing in Christopher Dunn. Yeah. And that's another situation. Reginald Clemens, he's in prison on a wrongful conviction. And someone from Jan, I don't know if you're familiar with Jan Banning. Jan is a professional photographer, and he is from the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
And he is in, okay. He's been advocating for a Christine Boyle who is incarcerated on a wrongful conviction in Georgia.
I heard of the story.
Yeah, it's a sad situation because Jan has been working on that case for years. But also, Franz Kurz from Germany, who has been on the show in the past, has been advocating for two wrongfully convicted individuals in Ohio, Shane Crum and also Donald Glenn. But we have a lot of people incarcerated in the United States wrongfully convicted, and unfortunately, they are still sitting in prison, in spite of the fact that many have, you know, proven their innocence. So when you came out and started your organization, can you tell us a little bit about that, Cilios, Cilio Foundation? Khalil? This seems to be an interruption every now and then. Khalil, can you hear us? I'm going to try putting him on mute and unmuting. Okay, Khalil, can you hear?
Yes, I can hear.
We keep getting, it seems like there's interruptions every now and then. It kind of like there's pauses in between. I had asked if you can talk a little bit more about your organization and the type of people that you get and also the type of help that you give them.
Yeah, it's usually there are people who are sent to prison and came out and have a certain skill set and their life experience that they want to use to help others. That's how they come to me, to us. What we do is we help them by making our network available, by coaching them to be able to do what they want to do and to achieve their own goals. And some of them have written books, done some literature. Others have started their own companies. So they all do their own thing, and the common thing that we have is it must be to benefit others. So you have to help incarcerated people, formerly incarcerated individuals, or do something to prevent in the first place that someone gets incarcerated. One of the main issues that we have here is that when people come out of prison, that is really hard due to the bureaucracy and many laws that you have to and rules.
We lost you again. Khalil, can you hear us? Khalil? This is the first time this has happened. Khalil? Khalil?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, I don't know why it's doing this. This is the first time that's happened. You're talking and then all of a sudden there's nothing there.
I keep hearing something saying mute, unmuted. But on my side, the connection is still okay. It doesn't get cut off.
Okay. So I'm sorry that interruption happened. Okay. So you were saying?
Well, I was saying it's the problem that we have in the Netherlands is that it's hard to find your own way when you come out of incarceration. It's hard to find a job. It's hard to get insurance. In some cases, it's even hard to open a bank account. So it's hard to get your life bed. And we see that like 60% of the people that leave prison, they start committing crime again. And this is one of the main issues why that is happening. So we also try to help and advise at that level how to get your life sorted out when you come out of prison.
So you have that they have that problem with the recidivism rate, well, coming out of mm-hmm. prison even there in the Netherlands, as far as resources?
Yes, it's not... in the Netherlands, it's a rich country. We have enough money. I think it's more a political problem than a money problem.
Mm.
That's what I believe. It's hard to sell to the mainstream media, politics. For politicians, it's hard to sell like we are investing in formerly incarcerated individuals, even though the literature, the scientific literature, proves and says.
You know, audience, this is Khalil says that there's no problem at his end speaking. And for some reason, people are put on mute, and this is, I never understood why they kept coming in and out like this. But one time when I had a show going and people were being interviewed, people were talking, the board was showing that they were automatically being put on mute, even though I wasn't doing it. So I don't know if this is a government thing or if this is Blog Talk Radio and their failures or what, but this is an issue that keeps happening. And I want to ask everyone to please be patient while we try to get this thing over with. So Khalil, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. I'm sorry about that. I don't know what is going on. I'm actually trying to look for a new podcast because Blog Talk Radio, just I would not recommend it to anybody. But again, do you get a specific age group when you're accepting people into your program, into your organization, or do you take in anyone?
No, they're all adults. We don't have minors, and we don't like youth. So I think maybe the youngest person that we have is 25 years old.
Oh, okay. Okay. So how long has your organization been established?
2.5 years ago, almost now.
They need more than...
I only left prison 3 years ago, so it's not a very long time that I'm up.
After 10 years to be exonerated. How's it feel?
No, I've never been exonerated formally. But that's the thing. I'm like 3 years out, and in those 3 years, I started the foundation. So we're relatively young.
Khalil, I'd like to ask you, have you ever been to the United States?
No, and I'm not allowed to go.
You know why? Because I often tell... when I speak with Franz and I speak with Mariam Jacobs, a psychosocial therapist, and Jan Banning and Franz Kurz and all others from other countries, I always wish that our government would they go over there, they go to Norway, because Norway is the role model for all prisons throughout the world. But I often wish that our government would actually invite many of you over to this country to talk about the success rates, how we can change the way we operate our system in the United States, our penal system, to make it more successful. We have a high rate of, the recidivism rate is very high, suicide rate is very high, and the United States is not far behind in human rights violations. And now I understand the United Nations has actually scolded the United States for the lack of everything that they're doing, and it's and everyone's kind of happy about it because it's long overdue. And I don't know, what are your thoughts on these kind of issues? Let me just get him off. I guess he's on mute again. Khalil, can you hear me? Khalil? Can you hear me? If anybody would like to call in and weigh in on this, please do. I'm going to put him on mute now and take him off and see if that'll solve the problem. Khalil?
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay. I don't know why it keeps going on mute, but when it goes on mute, I'll actually put you on mute and then unmute, and then you are all set to go. I don't know what this problem is.
Yes, it's weird. But as I was saying, I don't think it's just a U.S. problem. I think the U.S., you can see it because there are a lot of people like you who are showing the world what's wrong with the U.S. criminal system. But I really think it's a thing that how we look at individuals in our societies all over the world that don't comply with the laws we made up as a society. And the way that we deal with that is to lock people up.
Exactly.
And, it's not a solution because you aren't helping anyone with it. And you're making it worse, in my opinion. And you're creating a new problem. Because now you have someone inside the prison you have to take care of as a government. And they can't do that in a proper way. As you said, there are a lot of human rights violations. So it's like a bad thing. And it proves that like a government is equipped to properly take care of people inside the prison. And I think that's the thing that has to change, that the way that we look at people that don't obey by the rules that we laid up with each other. We don't see them as our product of our own society. That's what I always say. It's like we have, when we have like a famous soccer player or a football player or like a basketball player, we see them as the pride of our nation, like we created that. We got the NBA, and the NBA produced Shaquille O'Neal.
This is crazy. Okay, Khalil, can you hear me? Khalil?
You will hear me?
Now we can, yes. I'm sorry. I don't know.
I don't know when I got cut off, so I kept speaking.
I don't know why it's doing that. I can hear you. We can hear you fine, and then all of a sudden, nothing. So you say it's not at your end?
No, I keep hearing you. It doesn't get cut off at my end.
Yeah. Okay, so
I wanted to
bring up, and I don't know if you have this problem in your country, but in the United States we have an epidemic of mental illnesses in the United States and addictions. And as you mentioned a few minutes ago, how they just people are just locked up when they do something wrong. They're just locked up, and it's to me not everything is just in black and white. You know, there's always something in between. And we live in a country. There's a lot of static in the back in your background.
Oh, there's some noise in the background. Yeah.
We live in a we live in a country where it's very, very unequal. We live in a country where if you have money, power, or you have political power or wealth or fame, you don't normally get sent to jail or prison. And we're seeing the world right now is seeing what I'm talking about, because we have a former president and we have a current president who are both either trying to stay out of prison themselves or keep their loved ones from going to prison. And we had in Massachusetts, where I'm from, there was a governor, the former governor, who was the same thing, had been trying to keep his own loved one out of prison, which he did on two occasions that we know of. But this is a problem we have in the United States, is that a lot of people going to prison were people that were traumatized as children or adolescents, that came from very poor backgrounds, or came from drug-infested communities, or came from homes that had a lot of domestic violence going on in it, or came from single-parent homes. And these are the ones that are in prison. And many of them, as you mentioned, they can't afford lawyers, but even those that can afford lawyers cannot get the proper representation. So what are your thoughts on some of these issues?
Yeah, I think that criminal behavior is or most of the times, a side effect of someone's social economic status.
Exactly.
It's as you said, if you have an epidemic of people who are dealing with mental health issues and they end up in prison, that means that your mental health care in society is not available for them. So you keep walking around with mental health issues until you do something wrong, and then you end up in prison. And if you get proper support and help with your mental health issues before you do something wrong, the chances that you will end up in prison will become slim to none. And the same is with drug abuse. A lot of people start their...
I'm hoping this won't go on the whole entire interview with the distraction. Audience, many of you saw on television last week about the young man that leaped over the bench, the judge's bench, to go after the judge. That is one of the issues, a good example of the problems that are occurring in the United States with mental health issues. But we also want to look at the mental health providers. And Khalil, if you're back on with us, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Did you hear about or see on television that prisoner that was in court that jumped over the judge's bench to go after the judge?
Yeah, I saw that clip.
Okay, this was seen worldwide, and I wanted your thoughts on that because I had something to say about that as well.
Yeah, I don't know the exact cause or context what made him do that. So I don't know if he has any issues, mental health issues, or maybe he has something with the judge. I only saw the clip of him jumping towards the judge.
Apparently, there was a judge before this judge. There was a previous judge who had ordered him, because this was, I believe, they said it was his third offense. But a previous judge had ordered him into a behavioral facility to have him evaluated by a psychologist or a psychiatrist to see if he was competent to go before the judge. And the incompetent psychologist or psychiatrist gave the clearance for him said the young man was competent. This is what I have a problem with. We have mental health providers who are very incompetent that are evaluating people, and they're misdiagnosing them, if diagnosing them at all. This young man was told that was deemed competent to go before a judge, and we all know from watching throughout the world, watching this young man, that this young man was not competent at all. He was not competent. He should never have gone before the judge. But instead of the judge that was attacked sending him back to the psychiatric facility for inpatient evaluation again, she ended up giving him 4 more years in prison. The problem was they beat this. He was off. I mean, he was fighting and everything else, but they beat him so badly that when he did end up in court again, they had what they call a spit mask on him. And that spit mask is, they say, to keep people from spitting. I don't believe it's always used for that. I think it's used to cover up the multiple damage, the bruises that he probably had on his face, because even through that mask, you could see the bruises, the black and blue, you could see the swelling. So I was really kind of upset with the fact that this judge should have sent him back to be evaluated inpatient, because whoever the psychiatrist or psychologist was that evaluated him could not have been competent himself or herself to send him into that courtroom as deemed as competent. We have a lot of these things going on in the United States, a lot. And I don't know if you have these problems in the Netherlands, but there's major issues in this country that need to maybe take some advice and be educated by, you know, people like yourself and people like Franz and others in the Netherlands, Amsterdam, and Norway and in Germany, because we're not improving anything in the United States. It's getting worse and worse. And that's why I was asking you if you've ever been to the United States. Because if not, you should definitely be invited over to speak in some of these universities and these prisons and with legislative members. I understand government employees from the United States have gone over to Norway. I don't know if they've been to the Netherlands, but they have gone over to those countries, some of those countries, to see how they're operating their prison system. I don't know if you want to speak on that a little bit. Khalil? We're having
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, then I'm back. About the case that you referred at, it's as I said, it's like, it seems to me that it's a problem of the healthcare system that exposing itself in the courtroom. And if there was proper mental health care and there were proper mental health officials, it wouldn't have escalated to a point that he would have jumped on the judge. That's my, according to what you just said, it would make sense because, but that you can bring it back in social economic position. If someone is well off, he or his family can provide and buy the proper, the healthcare that someone needs. But if you cannot buy it and it's not available for you, that's like, yeah, the difference between Europe and the States. One of the differences is healthcare. Healthcare is widely available in Europe, in most of the European countries, for almost all this, the citizens. It's weird for us to see.
Oh, no. Khalil, I don't know what to do about this situation. Khalil will be back with us in a few minutes. This is an ongoing issue.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. I'm sorry to hear. You know, I can't understand. I don't know if it's on our end because everything seems to be gone except hearing with you. It seems to be at your end.
Well, at my end, it doesn't stop. I don't lose connection. I keep hearing you.
Then I'm going to have to let them know.
But maybe if I go out and in again, is that a possibility? Or
you'll be talking, and all of a sudden, there's nothing at all. You had mentioned the mental health system in your countries. It's appropriate in our countries. And I was watching the news last night or the night before, and they were saying how mental health workers are saying a lot of them are quitting their jobs. A lot of them are not doing it anymore because they said it's too difficult. But that's the whole purpose of proper education, you know, in training, is to be able to deal with this type of situation. And I believe the government should put more money into the mental health areas, facilities, than prisons, because they're spending more money on prisons than they are on mental health care. And that's a big problem.
Okay. Yeah. You can see it in the Netherlands. The government started to cut back on mental health care, so it became harder to get it for the civilians. And now you see that people with mental health issues are increasing inside of the Dutch businesses. So you can see that there is a connection between those. And that's the same with assistance by substance abuse. When someone's addicted, if there isn't a proper way to help someone, you'll find them eventually inside the prison. You can all bring it back again to someone's social economic status. As I said before, the successful ones, we consider them, we produce them from our society, but if someone fails, makes a mistake, we
Why is it doing this? I cannot understand. This is ridiculous. And Khalil, I was also going to ask you about the treatment, the provisions that were made in Europe, and when you were incarcerated, what were some of the treatments and what were some of the programs that you participated in?
Can you hear me now? Or?
Yes.
Yes, okay. For me, myself, no, there was a project that's called Block Notes. Then there was a writer that gives writing classes to learn how to write and express yourself on paper. That was one of the courses that I joined, and eventually when I came out, I kept being involved with that organization, and now I'm a board member of it. And we try to provide to more of these classes in the prisons in the Netherlands.
Mm. And it was basically to teach how to write and express feelings. Was there any more to it? Were there other components to it?
The component to it is the most valuable thing that I see as a board member now, but I also saw as when I was participating in it, is the safety of a bubble. You create a bubble inside the prison that is safe, that where you can express yourself and you can write.
Let me turn the volume down on this phone. We have a caller 804, you want
Hello?
To state your name, please? Yes.
Hello, this is Annette Blankenship from Virginia.
Hi,
and
Annette.
I just
Hi, Annette. How are you?
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Good. Khalil, this is Annette Blanketier. She is an advocate, and she is a powerful person. Let's face it. This is a beautiful person. I've never met Annette personally, but I really respect her for the way she is. Khalil, Annette, this is Khalil Scheer, and he is from the Netherlands. I don't know if you heard him speak at all. We're having problems with the interception in the radio. But did you hear any of what he's been saying about himself?
No, ma'am. I'm just familiar with, I know rehabilitation is a little bit different in the Netherlands than it is here, I think.
Yes,
I just wanted to touch base in solidarity and strength, you know, and numbers that we're coming together as a whole.
Well, as I say, Annette, you've been around for a long time, and I've seen you're on Facebook, social media, and I've been on there, and you've been awesome because you're, and this is what we need. Khalil, can you hear us okay? Khalil?
Yeah.
We're having interruptions during the show. He's able to speak, but he's in and out. Khalil, can you hear us?
Well, I do understand. I just want to recognize the mental health crisis and the drug crisis that's going on around this world, because we've had our government pushing us drugs, and we've had our government locking us up for too long. It's too many of us without a voice. For 40 and 50 years, sitting back, watching our government just take advantage of us in America, and nobody's speaking up for us.
You know,
I've done
that's exactly the way I feel. That's exactly the way I feel. Continue, Annette. I'm sorry.
You know, we've done watched drugs kill our families. We have watched drugs and alcohol and mental illness kill our elders, kill our peers, kill our kids, kill our grandkids. We're having people locked up every day, every second. It's over 130 people dying a day of a drug overdose in America. And we had a powerful speakers in the budget committee meeting in the Senate committee up in Washington, D.C. yesterday, and Jelly Roll was one of them. He's a new country artist that's come on the scenes. And so many of us that come out of the rural areas with nothing, have no voice. We're used as guinea pigs, left and right. And our government writes us off like we're nothing. When we started getting tough on crime, when we started abolishing parole, when we started coming up with mandatory minimums, a lot of us was in our 20s and our teens, facing the crack epidemic. Then we had to face the opiate epidemic, then the heroin epidemic, and then doctors played drug dealers with government approving of it. And now it's affecting the world. We have supplied the world with guns and drugs, and then wonder what's wrong with the United States. We ain't moving quick enough. They project us being locked up and forecast us from elementary school. You know, from what community we come from, gerrymandering. I have heard some of the top specialists speak, the top people that have the experience, speak on Richmond Capitol Hill, speak coming from around the world for the journey for justice in front of the White House in 2005. And we are still standing here battling with addiction and the Sackler Company with other pharmaceutical companies with drug stores, and doctors are going down, and we can't even keep people alive on the street. We cannot even keep people out of cars, feeding people, giving people shelter in America. I'm sorry, I trust in a higher power than people not helping themselves, and I'll just close with that.
And Annette, thank you so much. You have to come on the show as a guest one of these days. You are right on target. These are issues that have been a major issue in the United States. And as you say, they have not addressed it. They want to work around everything else. And Khalil, can you hear us okay? Can you?
Yes.
Okay. What are your thoughts on what Annette just mentioned?
Really powerful message. And it's exactly what we see abroad when we look at the States. For I cannot believe that a country as rich as the United States is treating its citizens so badly. And it says you're going from one epidemic towards another one. And sometimes those epidemics get imported abroad. But it's too bad to see that as I said in the beginning, when you don't have the right social economic status, you don't exist, you don't have any value. It seems like that sometimes. It's sad to see and hear that officials that are supposedly are chosen to represent the people, especially in the rural areas, don't do what their voters want them to. So yeah, it's heartbreaking to hear that.
You know, Annette mentioned rural areas, and I was brought up on Cape Cod, and Cape Cod is definitely not like the city. Cape Cod is like a rural, you might say, community. And one of the things I find out, people that are brought up in a country area, they're not as street smart as those in the city. And unfortunately, we're very vulnerable to those in the cities when interacting with them. And this is a major problem because I believe a lot of times crime happens because of that.
It's crossing cultures. It's crossing cultures. It's crossing ethnicity. It's crossing religion. I come out of the mountains, the Blue Ridge Mountains, Appalachians of the western part of Commonwealth of Virginia, and I've been in and out of the city since I was a teenager for 40 years, and nothing has the difference between living in the mountains and living in the city is completely two different things.
Exactly.
You learn to be self-sufficient. You learn to take care of yourself coming from these rural areas, whereas bigger cities have more money, more job opportunities, so therefore you got more people working for one another that knows the hustle. You got to learn that hustle, and that hustle takes decades. And you're never going to get that hustle crossing generations, and then you carry it on to Capitol Hill. If you do not know your place, and you start stepping on people's toes because you're just simply doing what you're told, that's going to come back on you tenfold, 20-fold, 30-fold, and 40-fold. Because nobody gave me no leadership. It was like I was apprenticeship and learning as I went, being coerced in the courtroom, coerced by the police since I was a pre-teenager. Then I have two children, coming from alcoholics and addicts with mental health issues, and we're talking about home after home after home after home after home. Some people will never admit they got a problem. Some people know we have a problem, and a lot of people are scared to speak up because I get looked at like I'm crazy, even in church, and I'm just tired of
it.
We don't need to be looking at each other like that today. It's too much hate, too much anger. Too much fear. We're paranoid. We're scared. We're afraid. And we are going completely against the Bible. I don't care how many times I've been married or how many times I got walked all over top of or I reached out and had to drink or do drugs or maybe slept with the wrong person. These are our kids, our grandkids, and our great-grandchildren. We're adults my age and older, wanted to use kids and wanted to use one another, and this tough on sentencing. We're punishing ourselves now. Correct me if I'm wrong. We're punishing each other for something we created, man.
You should be in politics. You should be in politics because I'll tell you, you're telling it like it is, and you're not speaking out of line. You are a leader. Because we have two types of people in this country. We have leaders and we have followers. And we have too many people trying to follow because they want to keep up with their peers who are doing nothing at all. As Khalil was saying, you have to be able to do something to resolve the problem. We're living in a country where nobody's doing any, that's not the priority for them. The priority for the people in leadership in this country is power and fame and wealth. That's the priority.
What am I? You tell me, coming from your shoes and somebody coming from another country, I'm standing here on General Lee's Hill in Colonial Heights. General Lee lived back in the 1800s. This is the 21st century. We're done took down the statues. We have abolished the death penalty in Virginia. We stayed blue. Excuse me if I'm stepping on any Republicans' toes today, but nobody minded stepping on mine for 40 years. And we're in Virginia trying to push for criminal justice reform. Barack Obama put that on blast with hope. And what does the Republicans do? Start 9/11 and keep the shit going. And now we got veterans. We got our kids and grandkids coming back from war that's screwed up in the head because we couldn't even get the help for our own kids. I mean, is that wrong to say? Or can nobody say that on Senate because somebody might not get a kickback? I'm on an $800 Social Security check or $900, whatever. You know, I'm barely making it, barely held on to my home and lived through synthetic marijuana, quit drinking 23 years ago, and I supported marijuana. I've seen a psychiatrist. Psychiatry has failed us. A courtroom took my first kid. They doped me up in a psychiatrist's office, and I have done nothing except answer to people ever since because I had 80 years and 9 felonies hanging over my head, and I had to give my kid my hometown and my friends up because I really didn't have a family to begin with. So, yeah, I'm standing here in the middle of Virginia giving Virginia help.
Khalil, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a powerful story, and I think, and it's all due respect that you've been through all that and still standing and still waving the flag of the things that has to change in your city and state.
Even my lowest, I heard people tell me I might be the only hope some people ever see. Even at my lowest, when I couldn't even pick myself up off the ground, I heard people tell me that. And with the God of my understanding and the direction I'm supposed to go in, we got to carry the message to everyone.
Amen.
Yeah.
This is no longer behind closed doors. This needs to be at our work tables, our dinner tables, and our prayer tables, with our bingo tables and our poker tables. I mean, it's no stone unturned now.
I think that's the most important thing, is to keep spreading the message. And now I'm careful to not step on anyone's toes, but a lot of people are all over the world. It's not just an American thing, but we like to preach to the choir. And I think that
you said it, Khalil. That's just what it is. It's preaching to the choir. That's what they do. And that's why nothing gets done. It's almost like everything stays confined or isolated or in the box.
I went in and out of the school system for 12 years and had my second kid graduate, questioning the school system with the Department of Corrections in the courtroom. So you know I stepped on some toes. And I was in psychiatric medicine, you know, court ordered to take responsibility and trying to answer to 1,000 people in a 200-mile radius.
You know, sometimes when you think about it, people feel bad for the blind and the deaf. But the blind, you find the blind doesn't see anything bad in anybody because they can't see. You know, the deaf, they can't hear the bad in people because they can't hear. And sometimes, and that's why it says, you know, like you mentioned in the Bible, you know, that there's so much that the blind can see, like the ears and the eyes of the blinded and the ears are closed because they're not going to believe it anyway, so they don't hear it. One of the things that goes on in this country is the people that have been through what you've been through, what I and so many others have been through, those are the ones that know, they have that wisdom to know what that what has to be done to make things right again. But we're dealing with people all around us from a different culture, because it's become a thing where money is most important, you know, fame and being popular. And there's somebody that has a platform on CNN News that I contacted when they showed that young man go over the judge's bench to attack her. And I contacted because I wasn't able to sleep after seeing that. I was not able to sleep because I knew that that person had been misdiagnosed. He was found competent by an incompetent psychologist or psychiatrist. And I didn't know how to or what to do to help this person or to even help the issue of mental illnesses in this country. I've been repeating this over and over and over again and repeating it to deaf ears. And those deaf ears are the leaders.
It's deaf ears because I told people, I have told people for 38 years, we as it was happening, we were shutting down mental hospitals, building private prisons, creating a prison industry that was not going to pay off. I stood in a circuit courtroom with all this time hanging over my head saying, people can't help themselves if they have no help. And I'm talking about, I come from gangs of Confederate flag believing people, okay? So I've been a little bit confused in my lifetime because I come up with different races. I come up in mixed communities. I come up with poverty and money. I come up in more of a balanced communities. And we all know about this, you know, back in the 60s and the 70s, we thought we was getting balanced out.
Well, you know, that's the thing, there's people in prison from, that's still in prison from the 60s and 70s. And that's sad.
Yeah.
That is really, really sad. You would think by now, and there's people in the prisons who have dementia and Alzheimer's, who have Parkinson's disease, who are in wheelchairs, who are terminally ill. They're still in prisons. What does that tell you about our leadership, our government leadership? What does that tell you about our mental health providers?
I was a nursing assistant. I have my nursing assistant certificate. I got my nursing assistant GED and my nursing assistant certificate when I was pregnant with my first child when I was 19. I left nursing homes in my early 20s because that was going straight downhill too. Look how many people died when COVID-19 hit coming out of nursing homes. Have we ever got a true population count of the incarcerated people that died in prison? And I'm not, and that's including the elderly that should be let out instead of being used as a number, a number, a number. Once we are committed a crime, we're no more than a number and a kickback for somebody else the rest of our lives. And we shouldn't have to live like that. I've lived in the projects. I've lived in the trailers. I've lived below the post, and I managed to live this long, and we all know what it's like to scrape, to have nothing, to live from one day to the next in fear. How are we going to handle another day? Well, that day has come. We got to start a revolution. We need to start our cell phones, these cell phones. I have watched 20 years worth of people with cell phones, smut, and dirty shit control them. When people are suffering in our homes. I can't tell you, including my own home, how many homes I've helped people try to put back together that was cleaned out by addiction. I can't tell you how many people I've seen stand back not knowing how they're going to pay their bills because somebody in their family wiped out their credit cards. You know, it just goes on and on and on, and we cannot, all of these are economical problems that we cannot discuss because we're living in shame and fear, and it's in all of our hands. I ain't trying to preach to the choir because I am part of the choir too. I'm just saying, you know, what did Martin Luther King stand up for? What did Rose Parks sit on the bus for? What did JFK try to say, you know? And this could possibly hold a candle to whatever happened at Watergate because some of history, I don't know everything. I just know I've been seeing our communities, our families destroyed. And I'm a mother, a grandmother, and I'm a voting citizen. That's what pisses me off, too, because I put my name
You got that right.
I put my name in. When Trump run in 2016, I put my name in. When Biden run in 2020, I put my name in because Biden was Barack Obama's vice president. Guantanamo Bay should have been shut down. We should have done let at least a third of the population out by now.
The last two presidents that I respected the most, and that was John F. Kennedy and also Jimmy Carter. Khalil, do you get people in your programs, do you get people that have gone through this, what Annette's talking about, the mental illnesses and addictions? Khalil, can you hear us? This is crazy. We're having a problem with them. Khalil?
I'm sorry I'm so long-winded.
No, that's good. You know why, Annette? These are issues that need to be talked about. You know, I was watching the debate in Iowa the other night, and I believe it was Nikki Haley or one of them came up with the ones that were actually hosting. They came up with the issue of mental health. So the mental health issues are being discussed a lot, but they're not being discussed. You know, they're being brought up that we have this problem in the prisons. They got rid of all the mental health facilities, institutions on the outside. The big corporations are making all kinds of money off of these people being incarcerated, like you say, the private prisons, and they're paying $1 or $1.50 a day.
It's Stockholm Syndrome. That is what to do so long coming out of courtrooms, decade after decade after decade. Everybody thinks that they can just tell each other to take a pill, they're crazy, and that, and then, you know, dial a 911, the false reports, and then the mental health. You know, it's a battle of our mental health. Our mental health is sick right now. And as long as we keep on going backwards and forwards with one another, and then I'm not saying nothing about Donald Trump because he's mentally ill too. But I don't even know what to think about politics now. I wish I'd never, ever learned about it.
Exactly. I'm not pleased with either one of them. I'm not pleased with either side because what's happening with the both sides is they're like children bickering back and forth about the other one when they're forgetting all about the American people, but the American people keep coming up in the subject. And we have 508.
Right.
Do you want to state your name, please?
Hi, Leona. It's Donna. It's been a while. I've been crazy busy. It's just good to hear your voice. And
Donna, why
not? Excited.
Donna, we need you right now because this is right up your alley. Donna Wynette is the founder. Khalil, can you hear us okay? Khalil? Donna Wynette is the founder of Families and Friends for Individuals with Mental Illnesses. Donna has been working ceaselessly. And her crew have been working ceaselessly to try to get Department of Mental Health involved, to try to get these hospitals involved, to start going into these prisons and doing some work. We have, unfortunately, the contracted medical providers with the Department of Corrections around the country, the majority of states is WellPath. And WellPath providers have permanently damaged many people in prison. Some of them have died. Some of them have been misdiagnosed. Donna has been working ceaselessly, and Donna, Annette, you probably are familiar with Annette. She's been an advocate for some time. That's been quite a few years. So, Donna, can you tell a little bit about what you do?
Sure. Hi, Khalil. Very nice to meet you.
Hi, Donna.
I have a grandson with schizophrenia, and he became legally involved, and he's been under a terrible private provider for those with serious mental illness who are incarcerated. But also, you know, I began my organization to try to secure a continuum of care across the legal system. And no matter what the legal standing was of these individuals, and I came to see the big picture, and now I still focus on my mission, which is the seriously mentally ill and the continuum of care they need in jails and prisons, and hopefully have them placed under the Department of Mental Health. But I also have seen how, you know, so many individuals are treated like trash. They're treated like throwaways when, you know, they need recovery from traumas, from, you know, just maybe not having anyone to have taught them, you know, a way, a path, a better path. And so, you know, now I fight for everyone who's incarcerated. And, you know, as people come out, you know, I've met some and encourage them and work with them a little bit too.
That's great work what you're doing, Donna.
Thank you very much. I do it with my heart, truly.
That's some hard work. Thank you for doing that.
Yeah, and we have the same. We have in the Netherlands, we don't have a lot of, that I'm familiar with, a lot of misdiagnosis. But as I said earlier, we do have that our government is cutting back in mental health care. So what we see is a lot more people getting in prison with mental health issues. And it's hard to get mental health care in a situation when you're locked up in a prison. A prison is never good for your mental health. So it's the mental health issue is I think it's a bigger problem than most know or are familiar with within the prison system.
That's true. And sadly, I feel that it causes, you know, it causes a decline in mental health, even if if people enter with fairly good mental health.
I spoke to a psychologist in the Netherlands, and he said to me that he works in a prison, and he said he refuses to go and speak to inmates when they are put into isolation.
We're having a problem with Khalil coming in and out. For some reason, he keeps getting put on mute at his end. Annette Blankenship has been a criminal justice advocate for a long, long time. And sometime maybe you two should connect as well.
That would be great. Where are you working from, Annette?
I'm in Virginia. I wasn't finished with my story. I've had my ups and downs, but I've done seen enough people with mental illness since I was a kid to know I'm sitting here, and I really do care, because we've done created a private prison industry, warehousing people with slave labor. We're kicking people out on the streets. We got homeless cities across America. We got people that don't have no food. We got people in their homes scared to even ask for help. And, I mean, it just goes on, the different tragedies and the hardships that we go through every day. We have went through this every day for 40 years, and it's got no more than worse. We're in America taking care of one another inside and outside of the prison system. I have done stood beside some of the best people that knows I could screw up my own life plenty by myself. But yet, I have yet seen, even with having the license plates, the LERA Act, the Literacy Education Rehabilitation Act by Congressman Scott, I have yet to see anybody really concerned about if I had something to eat or my bills was paid, but they'd worry about me smoking weed or doing drugs, working for someone else for barely nothing. I've been throwing peanuts to entertain people for 40 years. It was either that or go to prison. And, you know, none of us could live that honest, because now we have 1 or 3 out of 10 people affected by overdose. And, you know, how many people is it, 7 out of 10? I mean, I might be off on the figures because it's so many facts and figures about it. But look how many people are affected by addiction. That's a mental health illness. We have kids in school that even read or write. We have kids in school that can't even read or write. Most of the prison population are not graduates. from what I understand. I haven't looked at the statistics in a while, but I've sat in enough meetings, and I listened to enough people in the last 40 years, and I witnessed enough coming out of juvenile court and circuit court to know nothing is right about America until our leaders get right. Our media, our mainstream media, is hurting us. We cannot get to the mentally ill. We cannot get to the addiction. You know, we cannot. All these different states have different laws. And until our federal government wakes up, we can't just have Donald Trump announce an opiate crisis 6 or 7 years ago and then watch the country get turned upside down with COVID-19, and we're still harping over the same crap. And I've done, you know, marijuana's legal in Virginia now. The death penalty's ended. The statues have come down. These people are in prison. These people are dying in prison. These people need help. We have security guards. We have correction officers. We have police officers. We are starting to make mental health calls now with police officers. This is nothing that we're hiding behind closed doors now. This affects all of us. And I can't believe that people would turn their heads to their own damn problems following the elite. I can't understand how somebody's going to go to church on Sundays, put $20 in the basket, hold their cell phone 7 days a week for 20 years, watching people go without help and think they don't have a problem. When we got gambling problems, we're trying to legalize gambling with people living in the streets on drugs. You know, we got the animals dying. We got the world getting tore up. We're trying to suck the middle of the earth out now. Not that we ain't done suck the life out of people. We're at war around the world. When is people going to healthy wake up? You know, that's my mental health illness. I got PTSD. I got OCD, and I've had alcoholism, and I've had addiction issues. But I had to learn my way until we start teaching kids again to learn their way, because we have done ways latchkey kids. We have done ways latchkey kids that's taking care of their parents that's now had kids that they don't know what they're doing, and we've divorced and remarried, and that ain't helped us any with the politics of it, with the cultures crossing, the ethnicities, the religions, the politics.
You know, Annette, I want to say you mentioned earlier you've been on both sides, and I admire you from that, and as well as Khalil and myself and Donna, because years ago I gave up drinking in 1989, a year after my mother passed away, and she wanted me to give up drinking so badly, but I gave it up in 1989. But the thing is, people that have gone through everything that you've gone through, look at even Khalil. We'll talk about this government, your government in the Netherlands. You were convicted wrongfully convicted, which happens here in the United States as well. But look at when you came out, it wasn't the government that helped you to become the success that you became. You started your own organization helping others that were unfairly incarcerated on wrongful convictions. So the governments around the world, I'm sure, operate differently, but at the same time, they all have their one fault. And that's incarcerating people unjustly. And it's not the government that helps these people when they come out. It's these people themselves. Mental illnesses is a serious problem. That's why it's organizations like yours, Donna, that are started. While you're up here trying to do something about the mental health issues, Department of Mental Health is trying to do something just the opposite. They're trying to stay away from the ones that really need it, and those are the ones behind bars that are getting misdiagnosed. Annette, you mentioned PTSD. If you notice, a lot of people incarcerated have PTSD because they were traumatized prior to going to prison, and yet the only ones they ever talk about diagnosing with PTSD are military men. My whole family must be mentally ill then, because I had 7 in my family that were in the military, from my father, my 3 brothers, my 2 sisters, and my nephew. But the thing is, people in prison are getting diagnosed with antisocial behavior, and that puts the fear in the public, because when they hear of antisocial behavior, it sounds a lot better to keep the prisons full than it does to say we have a real problem in the prisons. Post-traumatic stress syndrome is something thousands and thousands of people in prison have experienced and are suffering from. Antisocial behavior.
It is across cultures and all economic backgrounds.
Exactly.
It is. It's been across, because long, if we're just now bringing light to the opioid crisis, if we're just now getting this reaction from the fentanyl, we have been going through this in the 80s with the crack. And this all started in the 60s of let's make love and get along. Well, it's like we've been getting high and working against each other the whole time. Because we started having kids in the 60s, and if you do your own research and you do your own math. When I started coming to Capitol Hill in 2004, I was trying to speak up for the wrongfully convicted. And I wasn't just trying to speak up for myself. Because as long as we have mental illness in God's eyes, we are the chosen ones. As long as that man is wrongfully convicted in the Netherlands, I forget your name because I ain't good with names right off. With wrongful convictions, you know, I've scrutinized every law there is. I have tried to study, you know, studied statistics, you know, went out and listened to speakers, volunteered beside people. I have done trying to understand the whole criminal justice system. But as long as we're privatizing off of people's mental health and problems, we have a whole country living in fear of the government and authority right now. We are living
how do you suppose, I mean, I've grappled with this. I've been an advocate for 10 years, maybe longer, but how do you suppose we find solutions, we get a change, a sea change, a needed change? We're trying every which way. And Leona, we're raising money, the Bridgewater families. We're going to take out an open letter, $10,000 open letter to the governor about our plight. So, you know, so we're doing everything desperately that we can think of right now. And how do we affect change? You know, that's the big question. We know the problems. And how, you know, how have you seen at least some change in that, in the work you've done?
The change I've seen is we, coming out of the Commonwealth of Virginia, we are an institutionalized state. That's no lie about it. We're already institutionalized by the way we live because the good old boys run this show in the Commonwealth of Virginia. So between incarceration and penalizing us for everything, we've basically done had everything stripped from us. And we're sitting here in Virginia, and I'm right beside Fort Lee, and I'm in the middle of Virginia beside Washington, D.C., and I've done watched these politics run in and out of these courtrooms off of Richmond, Capitol Hill to, you know, D.C., from the mountains to the city, and we're running from ourselves. We are fighting ourselves, denying. We are subconsciously thinking, we're so used to instant gratification now, you know, because we can have what we want and we want it now, that we didn't look at the long-term goals. Now we are penalizing each other, left and right, on both sides of the fence. And now we're seeing the White House and Congress and Senate cleaning each other's closets out when we've been trying to save us all along. But we, the American people that vote, pay the taxes, do the crime and the time, we have no say for ourselves in America. And that makes us mentally ill because we don't know what we're talking about if we don't have a college degree and a job. So many of us don't have jobs because we've had to take care of these streets with the streets. We've had to learn that hustle. And we're taking care of one another. And to one person, you have to be responsible for 5,000 people because nobody wants to listen to you. When we've abolished parole, our kids help. Our kids have needed help in school systems for decades. We are wrongfully locking up people, if we like it or not. People lie on people. People cheat people. Our forensics is ass backwards. Our forensics is defective when we ain't telling the whole truth in the courtroom because somebody needs some pocket money and the credit for another score in the courtroom. Stepping on the underdog. Forgive me for saying this, because people say I'm mad about something. I'm just speaking up for the American people for free.
Carlio, can you hear us? Carlio? Carlio? This is so strange. Maybe it's because it's from coming in from the Netherlands, but I haven't had this before. Carlio, can you hear me? Hold on a second. I'm going to put him on mute and then unmute, see if that works. Carlio, can you hear us? Carlio?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
We can hear you. What are your thoughts on, if you say you're able to hear everything that's going on, even though you're not able to, we're not able to hear you at times. Do you have these kind of problems in the Netherlands? And if so, can you talk a little bit about them?
I think we have similar problems, but less severe than you guys have in the States. And I would, I think it's also we have the same problem with politicians that promise one thing and do another. And my take on that is that politics never solved anything, so why should we expect them to solve this problem? All the main societal issues and problems were solved from outside the politics and left politicians no choice but to solve it eventually. That's my take, and I believe like issues as mental health care, the lack of support for people in society who are less fortunate, don't have a job or don't have education or have any some sort of illness. I believe that
we lost him again. You know, Donna, I was going to ask you, or even Annette, you girls, do you ever think of contacting the schools, the universities, and seeking volunteers to work with you in the organization, in the work that you're doing?
Yeah, I'm at one of the, I have a to-do list, which is a little bit ambitious, but one of the top items at my list is to contact Worcester University to see about getting an intern, because my work, you know, my workload has really increased with the advocacy groups. And another thing, there's one good administrator at Bridgewater State Hospital, and if we can get Bridgewater State Hospital in the Department of Mental Health, the families are going to recommend she run it. But the place is a mess, as you know. But one of the things I've been working with Dr. Lynn Cole, who's the assistant administrator at Bridgewater, is the Inside Outside program. So we're going to, you know, we're working it. We're just initial. We're just initially in the stage, but we're going to contact the students and the faculty of Bridgewater State University. They come in and have classes together, and they do the same assignments and, you know, with the people who are at Bridgewater State Hospital, which, if Annette doesn't know, is a Department of Correction-run institution. So that's, you know, that's one good thing that, you know, will be a connection between the community and that university. And if I can get myself an intern who can earn credit, you know, I can, what's really good if I get an intern from the criminal justice system, you know, studying about criminal justice, getting that degree to show them this side, not just how the criminal justice system doesn't really work. It works, but, you know, we all know it's wrong. So, you know, that's an opportunity for the person who works with me to learn, you know, the other side of the coin, so to speak.
Can I ask you and Annette to do something? First of all, I was going to say, Donna, the United Way in Massachusetts, they have and volunteermatch.com. You can register with them, and you can post for volunteer students, volunteer spokesperson, volunteer grant writers, volunteer paralegals, volunteer. What I wanted to ask you girls is, there's a lot of, in the universities around the country, there's a lot of schools, universities, where students are going for mental health, they're going for psychology, psychiatry, they're going for social work, they're going for criminal justice, they're going for law. If you can register with them and just try to get volunteers, it doesn't have to be in Massachusetts or it doesn't have to be in Virginia. It can be anywhere in the country if they're going to be doing virtual. And Donna, you mentioned something about something that you were doing at the with the governor's office, or you were going to be sending to the governor's office. You girls can have these volunteers that you recruit. You can write a letter and have them send it out to every organization or everywhere they can, so that we can sign around the country. Make it a national thing where signatures on these, and then send them out to all the governors in every state, in all 50 states of the United States. We can get signatures of even individuals. We can get signatures of families of the incarcerated. We can get signatures of advocates. We can get signatures of organizations and groups. And this would save time for you so that you can go on to whatever you girls are working on. But there's a lot of volunteer students, as you mentioned, Donna, that are trying to do their internships with nonprofits. I would do it, but I'm trying right now to close down my organization because I want my focus to be on exposing. I want my focus to be on the radio show. Next week I'll be 77 years old, and I've been doing this since I was 50, so I really am trying to back away from any additional,
responsibilities or
obligations. Yes, and that's what I'm trying to do, because I am burnt out. You know, I gave up my organization in 2014, and the people that took it over messed it up, and I had to take it. But anyway, and I can give you the information to contact these places to recruit if you girls are up to it. And
yeah, that's good.
And then I don't know if you're still doing the criminal justice reform.
I'm not out in the world socializing at the moment. I went back to school back to college after 25 years. I'm in my third year of college,
wow.
And I'm just trying to hold it down by myself because I lost everything, including my family. And
yeah.
Because of drug addiction and alcoholism, my behavior was uncalled for. But yeah,
I'm going to tell you, I know back then you were going through a lot because you were having problems with people. And you know, sometimes when you're trying to do the right things, that's when a lot of affliction is going to come your way. So I remember when you were going back in the battles
with the of signatures coming to the Capitol Hill over this very thing, the Good Time Credit Bill, restoring rehabilitation and education back into prison systems, and we need to restore parole. We got government giving marijuana, and we got people locked up with crimes for marijuana. I feel like I'm living in the middle of purgatory. I don't know what a 12-step program or a Bible is even supposed to stand for. I was all by myself Christmas Eve, and I'm sharing this because it's not about me. I'm telling you this. I'm 57 myself. I was sitting here another Christmas. I thought I was going to feel sorry for myself. I carried myself to a 12-step meeting by myself through the glory of the God of my understanding. And then I carried myself back Christmas Day. And then I went back New Year's Eve. And God woke me up, and God said, girl, you've had this power for 40 years. Use it to your advantage. And I'm going to start the year off right. That's what I'm trying to do, is pass the message on. Mental illness has ate us up because we got our leaders was going down. I sat there and watched, and I'm not trying to tell tales out of school. We had legislators, we had senators, we had delegates that started realizing drugs was getting in their families. They were stepping down. They were getting locked up. They were losing their job positions. And as long as you got the money going in the courtroom, you ain't going to do that time over a prescription. You ain't going to do that time for that violent crime. But the minority, 80% of us have to pick up the slack for the 20% that ain't even helping themselves coming out of the court. Or you know what I'm saying, 20% of us and 80%. You know, it's just not adding up no more. Don't make no sense even coming out of church in a courtroom.
We don't pick the problems. We don't pick the mental health issues. That mental health picks us. And I'll tell you, you just mentioned it. You said that marijuana became legal, but people are still sitting in prison. You know, whenever these things start to happen in the families of those who have leadership roles, that's when you start seeing these things change. That's when you see marijuana was approved, became legal, because there's a lot of people in politics either using marijuana themselves or they have loved ones that are involved in marijuana and drugs and other drugs. This is when you start seeing changes. When it starts appearing in their own homes, the governor, a former governor, right?
Mental illness is invisible. Drug addiction is invisible. Alcoholism is invisible. And until we recognize these sources of our core principles, we ain't going to get our core problems correct. And I'm not trying to be bossy, because I'm just saying, you know, we have over half of the population still hiding behind closed doors in fear of being judged.
Yeah.
You know, in fear of asking for help. You know, we're institutionalized. We're walking in lines. We're subconsciously just feeding ourselves with the telephones and everything else. We have superseded in knowledge, and our government can't even catch up, because when I started going to Capitol Hill in 2004, I had computers. I started hooking up wireless. I went to Capitol Hill. I watched over half of our leaders, probably 75% of our leaders, didn't even have cell phones or laptops. You know, they were still writing. And I'm on laptops. I'm on cell phones. I'm taking pictures. And I'm trying to volunteer for these organizations while I have a family that's constantly falling apart, because I can't hold everybody together, because I'm weak and vulnerable at times. And then
you know,
a hillbilly.
I have to say, one of the things about you, and you're not only very intelligent, but you've been a professional all these years. And you know what? You mentioned that you're in your third year of college. It's, you know, it's a waste of time and money, because you're the type of person, you shouldn't have to be in college. You should be teaching those in college, because you've been out there doing a lot. And that piece of paper is the only thing that's preventing you from doing more. This piece of paper, they should throw it out the window, because colleges today, look at schools of theology. They're teaching people how to become pastors and priests and imams and rabbis. And who are they learning from? These people that are getting these pieces of paper are learning from man. They're not learning from God. They're not learning from the Bible. They're learning from man. And that's why I say there shouldn't have to be any mandated colleges to get a degree. They should give you these. You know, I had college, but I also had taken several
certifications.
Not the certification. You have to take the civil test. What do you call it? I can't think
like
of it now.
Civil service test. Was it a civil service test?
Civil service. Yeah, I took those too, and I wasn't even a supervisor, but I passed the supervisory position. That's why I'm saying it's just a money-making thing. And Khalil, I wanted to see, I hope you can hear us, I hope you can respond, because we're running out of time, and I wanted to hear your point of view while we're able to hear you on all of this.
Oh, that's a lot.
And I also wanted to ask you, Khalil, if you can give the audience your contact information, and if they want to get in contact with you, or if you have a website or anything.
They can contact me through my mail. That's khait@outlook.com.
khait@outlook.com.
Yeah.
Okay. And what was the other? Khalil, I really, Khalil has to come back on the show because this has been, I'm sorry, but this has been difficult for him. Khalil, can you hear us? Khalil? And Donna, I wanted to hear more about what you were talking about, the State House, what you were going to be doing.
Well, you know, Warren and Markey, actually, there's an article in the Boston Globe where they're talking about the lack of care, the, you know, how the egregious actions of WellPath.
Yes, they found WellPath, they said WellPath is under scrutiny. And, yeah, I saw it. And it was, she wrote to the CEOs in Tennessee and in Florida, and I believe in Massachusetts, the WellPath CEOs.
And we, you know, we've written, now we're writing to Warren and Markey, and we've had a hard time, both FEMI and the Bridgewater State Hospital Family Group, which has really become a very, very strong advocacy group, Leona. It's become, you know, wonderfully strong. So now we're going to start a social media campaign, and we're going to raise $10,000, and we're going to put an open letter to the governor. So if we can't get to her one way, we'll put it in the paper. So I helped work on that letter, but another gentleman, family member, spent over 20 hours working on it. And, you know, so it's with the consensus of the group. And it talks about, the Disability Law Center that death could happen. So we're posing it as a matter of life and death, because we've seen such, deterioration and depression among our loved ones. So that's our next course of action, is to get a face-to-face with the governor and get the change. If we can't get the bills to come up on the floor quick enough, why we're so urgent, Leona, is that the bids go in very shortly, and if WellPath gets that bid, then they're in again for another 2 years. And if they were to be fired, the state would have to pay a penalty, and they're not going to want to spend that money in the budget. That's what I've been told. So we don't want them to get that extension on their contract in the first place. There's so many issues, and there's been a real problem now with access to visitation. So I have, laid that out in writing, and I had to send it to the Disability Law Center. There's so many impediments. There have been so many impediments to the families who want to be there with their loved ones, to give them the love, support, the worth that they so desperately need. These are people with serious mental illness, and to impede a family member is just morally wrong. And they're supposed to be, WellPath is supposed to be a mental health care provider. So,
Statistics and studies have shown 20 and 30 years ago, keeping families connected and together reduces the recidivism rates. It helps people keep the inmates on track. And then we took away education and rehabilitation out of prisons for decades. So we've had people coming in and out where these mental health issues has done building.
Khalil, I'm going to ask you if it's possible. I'd like to have you come back on the show another time as well, because I'm hoping that next time you won't be in and out when you're talking, because I feel like we robbed you of your time because of this problem that we're having. And apparently it's because you are calling coming on from the Netherlands, because the others don't seem to have the problem either. So it could be the distance. But I really want to speak with you and Franz about the possibility of you coming back on at a later time.
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
And I would love to hear, I called in to hear what you had to say. So I do hope you come back on, and I have that opportunity. I'm a great admirer of Franz Dow, and, I've listened to much of what he had to say. I've learned from him. I'm passing it on, and I'd like to do that with you too.
Yeah, oh, that's great. Yeah, Frans and I are friends, and I admire his vision and the way that he looks at the world as well. So I, of course, if I'm allowed, I would love to come back one time and maybe, if the connection allows it, tell something more about the thoughts and ideas that we have.
And it's again, it's Cilio Foundation in Netherlands.
Yeah.
The Cilio Foundation. I'm just Cilio Foundation. Let me just put that in because I'm on Foundation.
Are you going to share that on your page?
What was that?
Are you going to share that on your page? Are you going to share that on your page?
Let's see. Let me just.
You can share that.
Oh, okay. I found it. Cilio Foundation. Okay, it is on the internet. Okay, and it, the contact. Okay, the contact. It's a. Oh, you. Okay, you have a Virginia address. Okay, let me just see. Cilio. Do you, is the Virginia address, is that your address?
I'm from Virginia.
Right. You know what? I'm seeing Cilio Foundation and the contact, there's a contact address up in McLean, Virginia. I'm wondering if it's the same thing. Maybe.
I'm in Colonial Heights. I'm south of Richmond.
This is in, let me see. Promote equality, social phenomena. This might be okay. Let me just see
it's
if it's not. What was that?
Did you put Netherlands in with the foundation?
Yeah.
Put Netherlands.
Yeah, and that's what comes up. Cilio. And there's another one.
Well,
oh, that's kind of.
Who knows is he locked up or not?
Setting up a foundation in Netherlands, business, okay, .gov. This might be it. Read what is required to set up a...
Oh, he's no. Small for you, but...
I can...
Here, Leo. They have
I
one in Colorado,
the...
too. Okay, here, Leo. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can send you the contact, and maybe you can put them on your site.
Yeah, that will be good. That will be good. So the Cilio Foundation in Netherlands, is it connected with other Cilio foundations in other countries or states?
No,
okay.
We got the name by putting it out in asking people who are incarcerated, and someone who's incarcerated with a life sentence gave us that name.
Oh, okay. Because they have. Two different states. They might have more states here, too.
Yeah, Cilio is a Latin word, and it means restart. So it's probably used somewhere else as well.
Oh, okay. Restart. That's a good name. So, Donna and Annette, again, I'm going to say it's volunteermatch.com. And that's a recruiting, it's a website to recruit volunteers from the streets, from the schools, from the universities, from the workplaces. And that's where, throughout the year since 2004, that's where I've gotten my volunteers from, and also from the universities. I have a woman that she's a law school professor in, I think it's Illinois, if I can find her email. And you might, because they were looking for nonprofits, organizations to have their students apply to do volunteer work. So you can contact them too, but contact the University of Mass or United Way, all of them, and just let them know you have an organization and you're advocating right now. You're looking for volunteers. And Donna, I think you'll get a lot of them that way. And these volunteers, like I say, also you mentioned getting monies to for the work that you're doing, Donna. I was going to say, if you type in philanthropist, and I'll tell you, Khalil, this might be another one, too, for you. I don't know how you get your funding, but there's a lot of philanthropists all over the world, global, that that provide funding for criminal justice reform, prison reform, mental health, and Donna, even those areas where you're doing that kind of work, check it out, philanthropists for mental health advocates or organizations, funding for philanthropists for criminal justice work, even what you're doing for foundations, pertaining to prison issues. Check it out and see what comes up.
Well, I stepped right into criminal justice, and I took it right on by the guy. I had the authority teaching me the first semester in 2021 when I started, and I just filled in the gaps because everything that we've lived through is in the college books now, and we just need to start filling in the gaps, educating people, because this is about education. Because without people being educated, we ain't going to have no resources because we ain't going to know what to do.
You know what I see? I see a problem with the American Psychological and Psychiatric Association, because they get all this funding for research. What are they doing with all this research? You know, we know the problems. We need to know what they're going to do about it.
They're funneling it, just like the SACLA money, the addiction money, and the mental health money. They're funneling it to the private corporations to profit off these mental hospitals, these rehab centers, and our mental health with the private prison industry. That's how the school-to-prison pipeline was built over the last few decades.
Jeez.
I mean, it's a lot to comprehend, but it all goes together if you think about it. You just got to do the math and fill in the gaps and put the puzzle together.
That's why I say we need to work in unity around the country and putting letters together and sending them out. And Donna, once you get, say you can get 1,000 signatures in no time at all, and then take it to the governors around the country. You know, this is what needs to be taken. They need to see the problems. They need to see the problems.
They're keeping us divided. They're keeping us divided, living in fear. We need to be seen. We need to start pulling ourselves together. Somehow we need to trust ourselves again.
Well, you're going to find people with passions and you're going to find people with motives. And we have too many people with motives that don't want to unite and do these things because they're too busy trying to be out there in the limelight. They're trying to be out there in the media. They're trying to be out there with their more wealthier peers rather than to be there with the ones that are really fighting the fight. So I want to thank all of you for being on, Donna. And Khalil, I want you to come back on again. I'm really sorry that we've been having this problem throughout the show. But I will be checking in with you and with Franz as well and see if we can't have you come back. I also want to let the audience know. Let me just see who's coming on next week, the 12th. I think someone from the Netherlands, the 12th. Okay. Miriam Jacobs will be coming on with us too next. Was it okay, Khalil? Today, Frank. I don't know if you're familiar with Frank. Let me be De Bruin from the Netherlands. He will be on the 17th. He will be on in 5 days, talking more on issues of the chaos in the world. His name is Frank De Bruin. Are you familiar with him, Khalil? Maybe that's when I should have you back on again, too. Okay, so this is the 12th. Saturday will be Brother Hess. Okay. So we are going to be ending this episode now. I want to thank you girls for coming on. I want to thank you, Khalil. Khalil, I have a problem pronouncing Khalil. He says, that's okay. You can pronounce it anyway. Khalil, I want to thank you so much for coming on. It's been an honor having you. And again, I want you to come back because this interruption that we were having, I'm hoping it won't happen again. But thank you so much. Do you have any last words you'd like to say before we close down?
Not any specific last words. Just keep on doing the great work that the two guests are talking about and that they were doing. And thank you for having me. And by the way, yeah, I know Frank de Bruin.
Well, he's going to be coming on next week. So if you want, I can send you an invitation to join us on that as well. And that will be even more exciting to have all of you on together.
Yeah, it will be fun.
Okay, and as I mentioned too, I want to have you back on solo, alone like you were supposed to be on today, and hopefully we won't have this problem.
Yeah, I hope so. It would be great to come back. And thank you for having me.
Thank you. Again, everyone, Khalil, and you want to say your last name?
Shait.
Shait, I'm saying Shait.
Yeah.
Okay, Khalil Shait.
It's hard to pronounce.
Thank you so much, Khalil. And thank you, Annette, for coming on. And thank you, Donna. And I hope with all of this discussion that we've been talking about, the audience will start to realize we have an issue that needs to be addressed, not only in the United States, but around the world, in the Netherlands as well. We have issues that need to be addressed. And unless you have advocates like the ones that we have on with us today, the problems won't get solved. So I want all of you to really appreciate those around you who you see trying to do so much good in the communities and in the prisons to make things stable, to help others. And we're talking men, women, and youth, because there are youth, young people as well, in the prison. We have a mental health problem in this country, and it has to be addressed. So join forces with us. And Donna, you want to give your information, your contact information? And Annette, if you want to do the same.
Sure. Mine is FFIMI, Inquiry. Let Annette do it, and then I'll refresh my memory here.
Okay, Annette, you want to give your contact information or no?
I'm on Twitter at Do Not Give Up Hope, and I'm on Facebook at my URL link's Facebook, Do Not Give Up Hope USA.
Do Not Give Up Hope. You know, that's a good one. That's a good one. You know, I live from day to day, and my days are running out, but I live from day to day to keep my loved one and others who experience the depression at times because of the things that go on in this dysfunctional country, as I call it, is something that we have to do on a daily basis. We have to make sure that we keep them lifted up. We keep them in strength and endurance. And I thank God for that. I give God the glory, because if it wasn't for our Most High Creator, there'd be a lot more people in the system who would not be able to talk the next day because they wouldn't be existing. So something needs to be done. Something definitely needs to be done. Okay, so again, Donna, are you back with us?
Yes, it's FFIMI.inquiry@gmail.com. And also our blog is FFIMI.blog.
FFIMI.blog. Blog, okay.
And we publish, some great articles, just great articles.
Well, I hope you girls will join us next time again as well, because there's a lot to talk about. And now we hear it from the politicians, the presidential candidates. We hear from some of them talking about the serious problems in the United States with mental illnesses. And
we understand the brain better, because our brain we understand our brains and the plasticity, or whatever it's called. I'm not reading right out of a book right now. You know, our brains can heal, because our connectors ain't connecting properly, and we're being misled in different ways that we're not realizing, and we need to look at a much bigger picture for mental health, because it's killing us.
Exactly. People are not exploring. They're not really looking into the. And a lot of people don't know that they're sick. A lot of people don't know they have mental health issues. And I'm talking about our leaders, because if they did, if they were aware of the problems that even they have in their own families, in their own cultural family backgrounds, in their homes, then maybe they too would be more serious about getting this thing underway much quicker. And Khalil, what you're doing is awesome. You know, getting programs out there, getting foundations out there and things like that to help those coming out of prison, because a lot of them come out with no support at all. They have nowhere to turn. They have nowhere to go to get the help they need. So I admire anybody and everybody that does what Khalil did in starting their foundation to help these people coming out, to help these people that have no family, or some of them have no place to go, no jobs, no money, no food, no clothing, no shelter. So something like this is awesome, and I appreciate you, Khalil.
Thank you so much.
We are going to be ending this episode now. Please join us Saturday, I believe, at 12 o'clock, Monday at 5:30, and we're going to have next week we'll be having on a couple more guests from the Netherlands, and hopefully we'll have Khalil join with that as well. Thank you so much for listening in. Thank you all again for being on with us today, and thank you, girls, and thank you, Khalil.
Thank you. Have a good one. Bless you.
Thank you. Till next week. Bye.
Till next week.